Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Career Brand Blog Talk Radio. This is Latrice Collins, your host and the president of the Career Brand. Well, we have been in a fantastic and empowering series entitled America's Workforce Today, Igniting, and today we're doing Igniting Generational Synergy. I'm so excited because each week we get the opportunity to build people, our listeners, on various tools and techniques of how can they grow themselves and thereby growing themselves, grow in their career. I am so honored that we have two wonderful returning guests with us and for their willingness to flex to doing this particular show on a Friday instead of on Wednesday. So really excited about having them both back. And so today's show is building on everything we have covered over the past 4 weeks. So in this series, we started with demystifying stereotypes. Because before you can talk about generational synergy, you have to be able to first get out on the table what are some of the stereotypes and demystify them. Then we move from that into the fireside chat, which was so great with the millennial professionals, really helping to give us some insight on professionals who are in the millennial generation. We moved from that and talked about gateways and transitions, and so that helped individuals who are transitioning from either a different career into a new one or people who are millennials going from college going into the workplace. What does it look like? What are techniques you need to know in order to be successful? And then last week, that powerful week, we talked about true, real, executable solutions for creating a company culture fit. And so in each one of these particular episodes, we have been talking about real applications so that whether you are a leader or the employee or an entrepreneur, you're able to listen to what we have shared and help hopefully to shape and broaden the mindset, as well as giving you practical, executable tools so that you too can broaden your work environment and create a better atmosphere to work in. So today, so excited, I've been waiting for 6 weeks for today. Today we're talking about igniting synergy. And let me tell you a little bit about what we mean about synergy, and then I'm going to have my guests come on and start talking to you about how we can make that happen in your workforce. So synergy is the ability to take the energies that's around you and bring them together to make a stronger force. And so it's important to understand that prior to now, we're talking about using the best that's in people, and that's great for helping that person to be successful. But you've worked in many environments where there are a lot of smart people in the environment, but it doesn't mean that they're working as a cohesive team that has the power and the excitement and the passion to make that the best environment and producing the best results possible. So we want to give the tools and techniques of how to do that today. What can you do now that you have all this other information on understanding your workforce and building your solutions? What can you do to create synergy in your work environment? So back with us today, we have two wonderful, wonderfully powerful women. The first is Dr. Danan Carter. Now, she is the owner and founder of Danan Enterprises, a leadership and diversity company that specializes in improving cultural communication and customer service while increasing the employee engagement through executive leadership development and training development and training your employees. Now, you would have clearly heard that as Dr. Carter expressed to us the holistic way of setting up solutions in your environment last week. Now, Dr. Carter is also one of the assistant professors at the university. And forgive me, Dr. Carter, I'm going to ask you to jump in. I know you're one of the, I believe, assistant professors at Southwestern Assembly of God University. Did I get that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I also love I love to be able to have people who are in both the corporate sector, entrepreneurial sector, and in the academic environment, because that is a person who's well-rounded and keeping their foot in both. In order to be a great instructor, it's important to also stay constant on what's going on in the real market. So you can tell by all her comments and what she's adding that she clearly is strong in both of those. She received her bachelor's and master's degree and her doctoral in organizational leadership. So excited that you were able to come back to the show, Dr. Carter, and for freeing up your schedule to do this special episode.
Well, thank you for having me.
Our second guest today is Jane Ryan, and Jane Ryan is actually also she's pursuing her doctoral, and I believe she'll get that this year. Is that correct, Jane?
That is the plan. That's the great plan. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Well, right now it's just a vision with mine. It isn't even a started plan. So, you know, I look to you two ladies and say, maybe one day I'll go down that path. So you're my inspiration. So
you can do it. You can do it.
Okay, I'm believing you. I'm going by faith and listening to you. Now, after 20 years as a human capital consultant for two global firms, Jane found her calling as a servant leader. Today, Jane is the founder and president of Jane Ryan and Associates, LLC. That is a Dallas-based organization. It's a woman-owned coaching business that helps individuals and organizations define their vision to achieve their targeted goals. And she uses that and combines that through design metrics that drive results. Now, you know from listening to Jane last week, she is all about building that platform and building that education to helping your organization open up their mind in order to achieve the next level of results. So really, really excited to hear every time Jane speaks of more things the organization can do in order to mentally and professionally prepare your employees and prepare your management team to achieve that next level. Now, Jane has a special interest and passion in accelerating women leadership and development. Ooh, Jane, I have a person for you to contact later, too. Each day I get an opportunity to meet fantastic people. So we have an opportunity that you all will be hearing about for September on women in leadership. So that's going to be pretty awesome to talk about here on the Career Brand. So Jane is pursuing. Jane, can you tell me which university are you doing your PhD through?
Walden University.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That is a fantastic school. So as you know, the Jane's focus is really to help shift paradigms so people can see themselves differently in order to grow to the next level. Ladies, thank you both for rejoining the show.
It's great to be here.
So today we want to focus on synergy. We want to focus on practical applications on how to make that happen. And we want to really look at why is that important for the organization. So, Jane, can you help share with us why is generational synergy so important in an organization today?
Latrice, because most companies have three generations in their workplace today, the boomers, the Gen Ys, the Gen Xs, also known as the millennials, as we've been talking about. And in today's fast-paced, competitive business environments, creating synergies with a multi-generational workforce means really having a strong grip on the differences between these generations while creating an environment where employees can feel valued and excel by leveraging their unique differences collectively. So this collective synergy is what really contributes to an organization's mission, vision, and values.
Nice. And Dr. Carter, is there anything you also would like to add on why is generational synergy so important in today's environment?
I think as with anything, it's the point of how you get people to, I think Jane said it really well, how do you get people to feel valued and contribute? And with that, it's nothing different or it's similar to diversity and not much different than that because you're having different generations that come into play. But those different generations mean there's also a lot of conflict at times because we may not always be in agreement with how people view different things as far as in my generation versus your generation and our views. So being able to create that synergy is critical for organizations today and how they're going to be able to excel in the future.
Exactly. I totally agree with both of you. It is amazing the difference in a work environment where you have value and where you feel synergy. You are so into what else can I do to build this organization. So, Dr. Carter, last week we spoke about solutions. Can you tell us what is the difference between solutions and synergy in the workforce? Because I'm a little concerned that our listeners will say, well, you know, you gave us the tips on how to bring in and value diversity of different levels. So what is the difference of what we're asking about now?
The difference is going to be in part of your implementation, but it's also in the reception of it from your employees, which I determine as the engagement piece. Now, employee engagement is something we talk about and you probably hear about pretty often, but let me just give a definition for everybody. Engagement is going to be the extent to which your employees are motivated to contribute their success to the organization, and their willingness to apply discretionary effort, which to me is huge, to help the organization accomplish tasks to achieve their goals. Now, discretionary effort is key because it means that there's always something we're contributing, but it's like when we say we're giving 110 or 120%. How do I get my people to give that and be able to excel within organizational goals, not for selfish reasons, but saying we're looking at the whole picture of how we want our organization to achieve or what goals we want our organization to achieve. It's a big difference in just saying as an organization, we have a bunch of solutions for how to fix things, but we're not involving our employees or our employees are not engaged in the solution process or in the implementation of the solution. So those two are big differences in how we can get to that end result. You can always see organizations that have this whole litany of list of things we're going to do and implement, and employees have no belief or trust or buy-in to the process, which means that there's no attainable results or the organization's not attaining the goals that they actually want to attain or what they set out to attain in the beginning.
You know, I think a big thing of what you just said that really struck home to me is when you said organizations have a big list, and list does not create an environment that makes you want to work there or makes you want to give. But to your point, people are going through checklists. Okay, we sent out an email, check. You know, we hired more people, check. But that doesn't mean you've really established that environment that needs to be established.
That is correct. If there's times when you may have this whole list and litany of things you want to accomplish, but if I as an employee still say, I'm just going in there to get my paycheck, it's a big difference in me saying I'm going in there to make sure as an organization we achieve our goals. Not just me as Dr. Carter, I achieve my goals, but as a whole as an organization, I'm contributing to that bottom line, and I'm looking for the organization to be successful. Big, huge difference than just my personal success.
Very nice. Very nice.
I'd like to add to that. Yeah, I'd like to echo a bit what Dr. Carter has been saying, and that's when companies implement the solutions that we talked about last week. Employees really feel part of a solution when they have that emotional connection and they feel part of it. And then employees need to feel, again, they need to feel valued, because when they feel valued, they feel connected and become more engaged and feel like more valued contributors. I think that, you know, that kind of brings it. They really, I mean, we all know how we feel when we're part of something. And when the synergies, right, when we're all leveraging each other's uniqueness and ideas and it comes together, it makes you feel good. And it also makes you feel more like a valued contributor, which makes more engagement, more positive feelings, better collaboration.
And let me try to put this into perspective as well to everyone. So, because this really applies I want everybody to get the meat of what's being discussed today, because this applies to all organizations. It applies whether you are a Fortune 500 or whether you are, you know, a new entrepreneur that's launching your business and you have a small store, or you just have even a home office, but there's a team working with you. Now, the reason this is so important, at the beginning and putting in perspective, it's important for the leaders to come up with their vision of what they're trying to accomplish in that year, right? So where they're aiming. And using the techniques that they're describing is even important if you're the CEO that have your immediate staff, your direct reports, help you to come up with what that vision will be. Now, beyond that vision, you're going to need all kind of tools and techniques and strategies on how to bring that vision alive. And for that, there's no better resources than the people who are working within your organization to help come up with ideas on how to drive that vision home. So you can get so much more fire under the employees and under your leaders. Let's say you have three levels in your organization. You're going to get so much more fire in taking that vision and making it, bringing it to life when they're involved in the vision, creating a vision, that's the leaders, you know, as well as implementing and executing on that vision, that's the team. If you get them involved, you're going to get an outcome that you weren't expecting that typically exceeds your expectation. Would you ladies agree with that?
Definitely.
Most definitely.
So we talked a little bit about, you know, what synergy is and the difference and importance of it. And just to, you know, back up a little bit, I've also brought in the importance of you must have a vision. So, you know, we talked about, I think, on solutions, Dr. Carter brought up that you have to have your plan, have to have your vision of what you're aiming for. So we highly recommend that you listen to the audios or the podcast for last week's show, the solution show, to make sure you hear all that neat. Because this is about today is putting it into play. So now that you know what you're heading, where you're headed, what you're trying to accomplish, now let's talk about kind of what does it look like in order to get there. Now, if there are callers who are interested in calling in and asking our experts any questions, feel free to call in at 347-324-5330. That's 347-324-5330. Okay. So, Dr. Carter, so you referenced engagement. Can you tell us more about, you know, what does synergy look like in an organization as it relates to that topic maybe?
Most definitely. If you know anything about Gallup, you know, Gallup does a study, and there's areas that they, 12 areas that they identify that drive or influence employee engagement. And when you start seeing these attributes, I guess it is, when you start seeing these attributes, it'll start to, and you see that these are in your organization, you can tell the levels of engagement, and then I'll go through the list of these. And also the absence of these are there, it reflects a disengagement or a level of non-engagement from your employees. So let me just give you a few lists of these different things. I'm going to pull out some of the most important ones. One of the main ones is I know what's expected of me at work, so my expectations are clear. I know what I need to accomplish. The next is I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work, right? There's things that are within my access and not that I'm limited and I cannot accomplish my job. Number three would be I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day. There's no limitations or there's nothing that's hindering me. There's no roadblocks that prevents me from doing my best every day. In the last 7 days, I received recognition and praise for doing good work. This is important in a lot of, especially for the younger generations, in that I'm used to getting some type of acknowledgement. Am I on the right path? It's not a constant I need to go flood somebody with praise that's not, watered down, but you want to make sure it's legitimate. What am I reinforcing for that person and letting them know that they're doing something? And this gets into number five, which is my supervisor, someone at work, seems to care about me as a person. Jane mentioned the emotional attachment. There has to be some emotional connection for me at my place of employment for me to be fully engaged. If I don't have an emotional connection, I don't feel like anyone cares, I'm not valued, I'm not going to perform at my best. and that gets into someone at work encourages my development. So that means that either there's a mentor that I have, there's someone in another department that says, you know what, I really like this person and I'm willing to sponsor them to do a good job because I or talk highly of them to others because I know they do good work. The next one is my at work, my opinions seem to count. That's important. Not just that you listen, but do my opinions matter? Are you even do you value my opinions and my thoughts? Am I making a contribution to the workplace and being able to see that, see the changes there? The mission or purpose of the company makes me feel my job is important. I don't have a menial job. I know what I do matters, and I know that what I'm contributing matters to the job. And then even my associates or fellow employees are committed to doing quality work. So I'm not the only one doing quality work. We're all in there saying we want to be successful and we're doing our best. Because it goes into the other side of that. If I have employees or friends who are not doing quality work and my supervisors are not addressing it, I'm not happy about the quality of the company or the direction this company wants to go into. And then the last three, I have a best friend at work, meaning sometimes I have someone to look forward to sharing my workday experience with. We spend 8-plus hours there. Hopefully we have somebody that, you know, smiles and we enjoy having lunch with or something that I look forward to seeing on a regular basis. Number 11 is in the last 6 months, someone at work has talked to me about my progress. And then number 12, I think, is also important. It says, in the last year, I've had opportunities at work to learn and grow. Is my company making investments in me as an employee to help me grow and develop in my role and to beyond my role? So these are different attributes, but they are all important to show based on how your employees can answer these. It says, what are their level of engagement, their attachment, and their contribution to your organization? The less that they have of this, the less you're going to see of their input and how they're going to value the organization. So if you don't have, obviously they're highly engaged, the organization is going to show some loyal, committed employees who will invest their talents and skills into making your organization successful. On the flip side, if they're not, they're going to have the adverse effect of contributing to the destruction of your company through their non-participation, their absenteeism, unethical conduct, poor customer service, poor brand image, and then sometimes infecting a negative attitude. Now, Latrice, I know all of these, it's a lot, but I know that if you go through that list, there's people that can identify that I see either personally I have some of those attributes or I don't, or they know some of their people in their workplace who do or don't and what the reflection of those attitudes are.
I've been writing down. I think I'm like the other people listening, writing as fast as you're talking. I missed the first two, Dr. Carter. Could you tell me the first two again?
Oh, I'm glad you asked about those first two because those are my important ones. The first one is always key for me. Do I know what's expected of me at work? If I don't have clear expectations of what's expected of me at work, I'm not going to do my best because I'm continually trying to figure out what do you want, what are you expecting of me, am I doing the right thing or not? There's too many companies that feel like we told them what their job is, but I'll give you a good example. I worked at a company where I was there 13 months, and I still was trying to understand what was expected of me in one component of my job. Continually asked, but continually felt like I was failing because I had no idea still that this one part of my position was not clearly defined as to what was expected of me. So it makes a whole uncertainty for an employee. The second one was I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right. That means if there's software issues, if there's upgrades that need to be done, if there's, you know, paper pens, whatever it may be, do I have those resources available to do my job? And if there's you say, oh, you know, your department has to go through all these loops and hoops to get printer paper, you know, those are things that become discouraging to say, why don't we invest in our employees need? That means if we need to upgrade our systems and software, we can't still be using Windows 2000. You know, we have to make sure our employees have the most up-to-date information so that they can perform at their best.
Gotcha. So before you move further, there's 12 points that you referenced. And so my thought is going, you know, flashing through my head, I'm thinking of average manager, average leader, average employee, and how do they take this list and really make it something that can contribute to that
synergetic environment, right? So my, and I know you have a lot of thoughts to it. I had a couple thoughts myself to it. Like my first thought was, you can write this list down if you're a manager, and look at which, you know, you can make a survey out of it and literally give it to your employees. Just give them the 12, right? And have them mark down, you know. Now, would you recommend they, for instance, if they did it at the office themselves, they wrote this list of 12, right? So they can give to their employees. It can be a blind copy with no anonymous, no name on it. But they give it to their employees. Would you recommend that it's a yes, no, or would you recommend, for instance, they create this with a 5-point scale so you can kind of see if you're on the mark to some degree or not at all? Which would you recommend, first of all, just starting with that?
You know, Latrice, I'm really big in self-assessment. And so my if I say self-assessment, I mean it's not for me to go give a list to my employees. I need to first start assessing. As a leader, I would assess myself first. Do I have attainable goals for my employees, first and foremost?
Mm-hmm.
And by attainable, I have to look at everything around and say that means that are the goals achievable? Do they have the resources to do so? So I can start dissecting this list and contribute to almost 4 points. First one's going to be, are the goals attainable? The second one would be, do they have knowledge of their job? And that means I need to be able to say, talk to them, ask the questions, assess them. Have I provided them training for their job? Have I provided them the tools and resources? Do I provide them feedback? Do I reinforce the good behavior that I want them to have? So that knowledge of the job is important. Third is going to be, have I created an environment that fosters trust, support, and fairness? Mm-hmm. Now, we can always say, oh, yes, I have. Self-assess truly. When you start looking at that and you start saying, okay, what have employees complained about? What have they said they complimented you about? What are some things that they're coming saying, you know, I don't think it's fair that this happened? Are you listening to those, that feedback that your employees are giving you and saying, are you positively or negatively contributing to that? Do you have another employees who are negatively or positively contributing to that? Have you addressed it? So it's important in that one. And then the last one's going to be, is there a clear understanding of expectations and are the expectations consistent with employees' talents and abilities? Meaning, do I have some expectations where they're not going to be able to attain it because they don't have, I'm not utilizing their talents? And do I even know fully what their talents are and what their abilities are? And am I, given that sometimes you want, I know as an employee, I want to be stretched. I don't want you just to give me something and say, you just stick to that.
Right.
Give me a stretch, give me something that's going to stretch my abilities. And sometimes it's tapping into something that maybe I haven't used because it's not part of my regular job, but it's something I can contribute positively to your organization.
I wanted to add to that, too, I'm glad, Dr. Carter, you brought up about the Gallup data because that's, I mean, there's just over 50 some odd years of, research going into that data, and it continues. But I was thinking about it, you know, over the past decade, Gallup has surveyed more than, I think, 10 million people worldwide on the topic of employee engagement and or, you know, how positive or productive people are at work. And only one-third strongly agree with the statement, at work, I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day, right? And for those who do not get to focus on what they do best, their strengths, the things that are that partly are innate, that come naturally to them, but also, you know, the talents that they've strengthened throughout their careers, it can be very costly to an organization. And in a recent poll of over 1,000 people, among those who strongly disagree or disagreed with this what I do best statement, right, not one single person was emotionally engaged on the job. I found that very interesting, especially since we're talking about engagement and the importance of people feeling valued and connected, and then also, you know, emotionally engaged, right?
Right. And see, Jane, that is the reason why when I first started asking about writing it down and giving to the employees, that's the reason I thought about that, because I am a big supporter of 360-degree evaluations. I mean, I'm probably a little nutty about that, because I think it's one aspect to
stop and look at yourself from your perspective. It's a totally different component when you ask other people about the same exact thing and their view of it. You know, because I think it would be helpful. So to Dr. Carter's point, you know, look at this list and really, you know, judge it and see if you have things established right. But then if you then allow your employees or your team to answer the same questions, you'll see, one, if you have a disconnect with reality, like it'll help you see you thought that you had created an environment and they're like, you're closed door. You throw out rules,
right,
and then you don't tell us the details. So sometimes people who don't have the strongest communication skills, they don't recognize when they're not providing the environment that is needed to be successful. And then in this, the last part I would that I'm thinking to make it just this one list that Dr. Carter's referencing, and so to piggyback on what Jane you've just said and Dr. Carter said, is as an employee to look at the list to see what have I done in order to help in those areas, right? So it's not just about has the manager established this, you know, has the manager established a path for me to succeed? Have I stepped up and asked for it? Have I said I'd love to be on a stretch assignment? Have I demonstrated skills to them that they prove to be trustworthy to take on, you know, new things or to be stretched to another level? So by all three, being able to take ownership of such a list and looking at the variances and then coming together as a whole to say, this is what we realize. Now what can we do to really make this better? You know, that what can we, and you can't implement everything at one time. That just doesn't work.
Correct.
Right? This is why you keep hearing Dr. Carter saying, what's your plan, right?
Right.
And I think that's important because it looks at, you know, if we really want to create these synergistic environments, right, within organizations, it's really important to say, okay, with the assessments and where are we today, where are we, and where do we want to go, where do we need to go to really achieve the strategic vision of the organization and to really, as individuals, help drive that, right, and contribute to that. And so then you say, okay, gap analysis. Here's where I'm just fanatic, as you said, Latrice, about metrics, because it's really important. You got to know where you are, so you know where you got,
that's right,
and then you got to know where you're going. And then you do gap analysis, how do I close that gap to get where I need to be, and develop milestones, you know, certain milestones that have to be achieved during a certain period of time. And, you know, it's just continuous, and you have to make sure that you're hitting them. And if not, why? What do we need to, what's working, what's not working, what do we need to be doing differently? Do we have the right people in the right positions? You know, are we truly leveraging their uniqueness, their unique contributions and value that they bring? You know, we may not have the right people on the right team. It doesn't mean that, okay, we'll just, you know, get rid of, you know, those two over there that aren't, you know, doing well. Why aren't they doing well? What's going on? What are the dynamics of that team? Where the synergies are falling there, right, when something like that happens. So then it's up to managers to really to look at that and, again, reassess and say, okay, maybe, you know, Bob would do a lot better if he was over doing these types of, you know, tasks and the work over here, and, you know, Susie would be much better doing this or that, you know. So it's just important that it's a lot, you know. Running a business is a really hard thing to do, right? And it takes a lot. Yes.
I remember one of the larger financial institutions changed their whole model a couple of years ago. And so they had where people who used to be operations people, and that's normally the people who do all the paper and organization and so forth, they split them in half, and they made some were customer focused and some were operations without any thought to skill set. So can you imagine? There's the people who are normally behind the scenes, you know, dot those I's, cross their T's, who intentionally chose a career and a role like that. And they literally mm-hmm. just took some of those people and made them customer-facing and then dinged them when they weren't the best at customer service. And then you took some of the people who were phenomenal at the customer service piece, and they put them in the operations side where they never spoke to a customer. So imagine mm-hmm. how that environment changed, where you had the talent. You had people interested in what to do, but you didn't, to Jane's point, you didn't look at as an organization who really belonged in what spots or what slots in order to help them and the company be successful. So
right.
to that point, we're talking about not just people's strength, but their potential, too, on what else can they be if we refine them. Now, ladies, I need to take a quick one-minute break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to kind of go to Jane next. We're going to come back after the break, and after hearing all this meat, we're going to talk about, you know, how can organizations create that generational synergy now? So now that we know the importance of it, what are some of the things we can do to create it? Back in 1 minute.
We all know that companies have a brand, but what about you? What's your career brand? TheCareerBrand.com will help you identify your brand, your career brand. Navigating the career landscape can be daunting and challenging, but you don't have to go it alone. TheCareerBrand.com is dedicated to guiding professionals through the career branding process. With the use of cutting-edge tools, training, and consulting top career coach, author, and creator of TheCareerBrand.com, Latrice Collins. At TheCareerBrand.com, you will find incredible and useful career branding books by Latrice Collins that will show you the ways of breaking through the glass ceilings. Men and women of all ages have raved about the benefits they receive from these books. Also, don't miss Latrice Collins' webinar, Brand Ignition. Companies are always looking for the best talent. With Latrice Collins and the tools at TheCareerBrand.com, you will demonstrate to employers you are that talent. To learn more, visit TheCareerBrand.com.
Also, don't miss Latrice Collins' Brand Ignition.
And we are back.
Best talent.
Okay,
with
so, I am hearing feedback from the radios. So thank you, Annette. So, and we're back. So now that we've had a chance to kind of digest all that we've learned and all we've heard today, Jane, help us out. We got about another, we're two-thirds through the show. We understand engagement. We understand the importance of vision and getting your employees there. Tell us, how can an organization create organizational synergy?
I'm glad we're talking about this because this month, right, we've been talking a lot about generational synergies, right? And companies really need to, you know, look at that. That is important. But in reality, organizations also need to look at not only the generational differences, but also individuals, right, and what each employee brings to the table. And I think we started to talk about that before the break. So, you know, with this understanding, organizations can help develop their people for success, right? So here are a few ideas that you can implement to create employee engagement and synergies. First, and Dr. Carter mentioned this, companies need to invest in their people. Management needs to assess, right, assess their team's strengths and then also know the areas for development. Then take action. Make employees feel valued. Let them know how you and the company want to develop them and help them grow. And most importantly is build trust. That trust has to be there for any type of interaction, emotional connection, feeling valued to take place. So building trust is very important because individuals are more prone to trust their managers when they feel valued, and when they feel valued, they will have a positive emotional connection to their work and become more engaged. Next, build teams based on their unique differences, right? Based on their strengths, based on what they enjoy doing and do well. Because when an individual is doing something they really enjoy doing, they're doing it well, really well, right? And they're in an environment that they really enjoy, they will be successful. So once you've built
your diverse teams, where each member of the team brings their unique contributions that complement each other, let the teams figure out how they can best work together. This will create synergies among them, and specific goals and results can be achieved through their ability to interact with each other, to leverage each other's strengths, and to build those synergies. And our role, or your role as a manager, is to allow that to happen, and to also, though, to encourage, right, to encourage contributions from each team member, and to support them with the tools and the resources and the development that they need to be successful, and provide regular feedback that is straightforward, clear-cut, understandable, and make sure that when, you know, that gets back, that gets to performance management and making sure that managers, management, anyone responsible for others within an organization has ongoing performance discussions with their staff, their direct reports, and they're doing it correctly. So many organizations do performance reviews once a year just as a process and, you know, check off the box, right? And it's really critical that that performance management, performance reviews are ongoing. And then, so by building, you know, by encouraging the contributions, by bringing the teams together, having the right understanding who your people are and what, you know, what development they need with regular feedback, you know, these actions build a culture that fosters innovation and synergistic teams, right? And one way to support your people and ensure they have the tools and resources they need to be successful is to make sure that the curriculum, the design, the types of learning and development that you're putting in place are truly going to be measurable and effective. And I recommend, and there's a lot of studies out, and I believe it's McKinsey that just recently put one out, and Deloitte Burson also has a study on the importance of coaching, and including coaching as well as a mentorship program in development plans, and knowing where that's going to be best leveraged.
And Jane, we have a caller that's calling in, so let me take that question that caller has.
Okay.
So, caller, you are live. Tell us your name and what is your question?
My name is Foster Williams. I was just asked a question by a very senior-level operations professional who has retired. Opportunity came up with a smaller startup operation to come in a more of a supervisory mode rather than being the top dog. And he was wondering what tips he would like to hear. He's on the radio right now listening. What tips from the panelists would be good for him going into being a very senior level, older guy, going into an environment that's managed by a much younger management team? Is there something that he can do to prevent maybe upsetting the apple cart, so to speak?
Gotcha. Makes sense. Jane, would you like to start off with an answer for that?
I was going to ask Dr. Carter, because I remember earlier you were talking about, you know, yourself being in that situation.
Sure. There's a couple of things. For one, it means the first thing I say is build relationships. That means I should work on how I build relationships with others, meaning I should get to know you, let you get to know me. I have to be receptive and open to that. The relationship piece is going to help to build the trust, which is important. Without the trust in there, then you're not going to trust what feedback I have, or I'm not going to be receptive to your feedback either. So, and I learned that early on, that the relationship piece is the most important thing overall. It doesn't matter what your knowledge level is. It doesn't matter what your experience level is. If I don't build a relationship with my people, my team, or with the management, then we're not going to have that collaborative, open environment where we can discuss the differences, our challenges, provide and give feedback, all of those different things. So that would be where I say start. Second is going to be being receptive to doing things differently. That's it comes into a point where we can be stuck, and I've been there, where I'm like, "This, I've done this, it's worked, why are we changing it?" And I have to step back and say, okay, maybe it's worked for me. Let me know. Let's see if there's a different or better way now that we've kind of excelled down the path. And maybe there's some different things that we didn't have years ago that we have now. And mindsets have changed where now something that didn't work years ago can work today. So being receptive and open to say that there may be a different approach to doing that, and I'm okay to, if I take on the mentality that I'm always learning, makes a huge difference. If I'm looking and seeking to learn from someone else.
Yeah. I mean, especially, Foster, to you mentioned someone that was, you know, in the workplace a long time and is now coming back in a different role and now reporting to leadership that's younger, right?
Yes.
If I understood the question correctly. So what I've found in my coaching is, and I've studied and I apply emotional intelligence and how through emotional intelligence and strengthening that skill, it can help you be much more effective, right, in your communications. And so once, as Dr. Carter said, the trust, the relationship is built, and that has to be built around building rapport and trust, you really need to have that self-awareness of yourself, right, and awareness of others. So who am I, and how do I interact in this new environment? Who do I have to interact with? Who's my audience? And who are they? Who are they? How do they think? You know, how can I best align and communicate effectively with them? And it's difficult sometimes, depending on who the type of environment that you're in. But I think most importantly is someone like that coming back into an organization brings such qualities and strength. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. So being a mentor and to be able to have knowledge shared, that mentor is, you know, based on my experiences, these things have worked, these things didn't, making it so that people around you, whether you're reporting to them, whether they're peers, that you feel connected and there's openness in your communication.
And I'd also like to add to this topic, because they're passionate about this, considering there are so many people who are transitioning from previously higher roles or transitioning into other organizations where they're now kind of flip-flop from the authority figure to one that is questionable when it comes to the millennials. Or excuse me, not just millennials, when it comes to you're in a new environment, let's face it. It's not just that the gentleman is going to face that he's going into an environment with younger people, but he's going into a new culture altogether. And every company has its own kind of DNA, and you have to make sure how do you come into that particular culture's DNA and be viewed as a great partner in it versus someone who's, you know, creating a wave. So to that extent, I think one thing based on kind of feedbacking on both Jane and Dr. Carter, when we talk about building trust, it's important that you, some of the advice that we're sharing, such as I'm saying open yourself up to asking questions and identifying the individual strengths. So if you see one of the team members is really very strong at a particular item that you're not strong at, say it. That, wow, you are really good at marketing, or I see how you handle customer concerns is really strong, or how you think on your feet and come up with ideas is really pretty remarkable. And so simply by identifying a fact of something about someone else's attributes that they do well, right, identifying them and saying them out loud to the person or to people around them will earn you credibility, not at all because of anything associated with trying to win them over. That's not what we're talking about. It's that you legitimately identified an aspect about them that you value
and you earnestly express that to them where it does not in any way come across as fake. Because the moment you come across as fake, you're going to lose all credibility, right? And then by listening first and identifying and recognizing what they're doing well, people will automatically begin to open up because you see them as a valued person and not just as another employee or another person. You're seeing them and acknowledging them for the value they're bringing, right? And then once you're able to open that door, you can say, hey, listen, I'm really strong at blank. Like, my strengths have been in operations, improving efficiencies, really helping to achieve goals. I see your strength is also this, this, and this. Maybe we can partner in some way that I can learn some things from you, and if you like, I can help you with some of these other areas. So notice you didn't say, and I can do this for you, because that would imply they don't have that skill. Since you don't know them yet, you don't know if they don't have a skill you have, so you simply can share what skills you have and say, hey, if that's something you're interested in, you know, then let me know. If that's something you ever care about, you know, knowing my side of it, I'm willing to share. Then that's still opening the door of communication, because to Dr. Carter's point, that becomes the secret to really being being advanced into the relationship and into your career. There's a lot we can learn from Betty White. Betty White, I don't know how old the woman is now, but everybody loves Betty White. Like, every generation loves that woman because she doesn't criticize. Well, she criticizes across the board. She doesn't care what generation you're in. But she, you know, she values, she demonstrates that she values the uniqueness and the opportunities that everybody brings. And because she's just real to herself, she's real to who she is, and she values you being, and she's learning. You see her evolving right before you, right? Because she's that kind of entity, she's loved by all and respected by all. That's something we can all learn.
Very true.
Foster, has that helped, Foster, all of the items that we described?
That was absolutely perfect. That's exactly why I told Steve to listen to the show. Thank you, ladies, very, very much.
Thank you for calling in. Okay, so we have a few minutes left. That was really exciting that we were able to share that. Thank you, ladies, able to share and help. And I think one of the beauties that came out of that was, you know, what we've been talking about is not limited to millennials or limited to, you know, Gen Xers or baby boomers. We're talking about, and to Jane's point, how do we now, we've been talking about generations just to give you an idea of the macro big picture. But now we're focusing on, now that you know that, you understand the differences, you understand the strengths and so forth. Now as leaders, you have a responsibility to now almost put that on the table and focus on how do I individually look at each person and individually help them to exceed and help the organization succeed. Is that making sense? Would you both agree with that?
Yes, most definitely.
We have about 5 minutes left. So, Jane, I know we kind of, if we cut you off a little bit to take the question, is there anything else you'd like to add to your topic on helping them to create this synergy before we turn it over to Dr. Carter to give her perspective as well?
Thank you. I think that was a perfect timing because I got through the important points that I had wanted to share. So, yeah, no, Dr. Carter, anything else to add to that is welcome.
I think from what we've talked about today, I listed 4 points, say 5 points that I figured that were most important that we talked about. One was we talk about self-assessment, seeking feedback. It's also acting on the feedback you receive, which is critical. So not just asking employees, what do they think, how do they feel about the employee, their engagement at work, and all the different topics or the attributes of employee engagement we talked about, but are you acting on the feedback you received? Are you making changes based on the feedback you received?
Right.
Number two, was as employees, and I think Latricia hinted to this, was asking for development. I recall when I saw people getting promoted over me that I went and said, hey, I'm interested. How can I get promoted? How can I get this opportunity for development? And my senior executive, they didn't even know I was interested or had that desire. So it's not just a point of being overlooked. It's a point of making sure your voice is heard and voicing that you have a desire to go in a certain field or a certain way. Number three, we talked about the 360s. And this goes back again to number one, but on 360s, the biggest thing I sometimes are critical about is be open to getting all types of feedback. So don't select the people that are just going to give you the good feedback or the
right.
people that are just, you're just good friends with. Be open to getting all the feedback you can, and don't reject feedback based on the person, because there's sometimes a hint as to there's something that it may be truth about that. And
mm-hmm.
I want to be thankful to the person who was honest enough to give me that feedback. And I'll give you one quick example. I remember someone saying, you know, Dr. Carter walks around like she's busy. And I'm saying, yes, I am. But, you know, is there something to that that really translates into they want to see more of me? And so how do I change that instead of saying, oh, of course I'm busy. What do you think? How do I make sure that change is there? So acting on the feedback and not just rejecting it. Number four would be for organizations to communicate often, communicate their updates, communicate their progress. Do not leave your employees feeling like we don't have no idea what's going on. We gave you all this feedback and we don't know anything that's happening. Make sure
mm-hmm.
that there's a continuous type of communication. If there's something that cannot happen, if there's something that is not being done, can we communicate that? Can we let them know why it's not being done, what's happening, what's going on? Keep that level
right.
of communication. And my final one would be put your ego aside. Don't allow that because you feel like you have this knowledge, experience, I should be or should have. Put your ego aside. Be open to learn. On the organizational side, though, it's remove any threats for job knowledge, for my job in general, so that you don't have knowledge hoarders, meaning I'm not willing to give you my knowledge because I don't want to lose my job or I don't want you taking my job. So
mm-hmm.
when we talk about the trust aspect, I have to remove that, but I also need to put my ego aside and say I'm open to receiving the feedback. I'm open to giving and sharing my knowledge. I'm not thinking I should be better or further than what I am. I could be, I can be, but I need to work through that environment or work through the whole process at times to get there. So that's my two cents.
Those are excellent. I'm going to add a third cent to your two cents. And that is hire an expert when in doubt. And I say that because, we've done our best to give you a really powerful month that really focuses on tools and techniques to really elevate yourself and organization to another level. But you have experts all around you. You have some mentors that will be around you that are free mentors, and you have others like all of us on the call who this is what we do for a living. So right quick, Dr. Carter, can you share with them a way that someone can reach you? And Jane, if you can do right after her, what's a way that people can reach out to you after the show if they have questions?
I am on LinkedIn, and my first name is Danon, D-A-N-O-N, Carter. I'm also on Facebook under Danon Renee Carter, and then my website is danoncarter.com.
Great. And Jane, closing it out.
I would say the same. You can find me on LinkedIn, and it's under Jane Loya, L-O-Y-A Ryan, and it's under my company name of Jane Ryan and Associates, and then also through the website, Jane Ryan Associates, and it's Jane at JaneRyanAssociates.com.
Fantastic. And again, ladies, thank you so much for sharing in the show. This is Latrice Collins. You can reach us at info@thecareerbrand.com. Guys, we have a phenomenal 2 months coming from now. We're having military and careers in August and women in leadership in September. So stay tuned. We have a powerful, powerful future coming for you. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great one.
Have a good one.